Live from Columbus, it's the Zone of Truth. This week on the show, Griff and I enter beast mode as we review Monster's Nasty Beast hard tea variety pack. Weave tales of our own in segment It's Always Spooky and Galarian, of course, answer some listener questions. I'm your host, Steve, in the studio with your GM and my co-host, Griffin. Roll a will save. You're in the Zone of Truth. Griff's assumed the position. That means live from Columbus, it's the Zone of Truth. We're back.
We did it.
How you doing, Griff?
I'm feeling nasty.
Why's that?
I don't know. Just feeling a little nasty.
Yeah, it's going to be a nasty.
A little beastly.
Me too. Beastly, a quality flick. We all know. It's a great one. How have you been doing today, man?
I do pretty good.
Yeah.
Got some recording done.
Yeah.
Got some, got some live zot. It's always a good time.
Absolutely. Always a good time.
Got some new drinks to drink. Sometimes a good time.
Just sometimes.
I will say that this is one that I'm excited for and have been excited for a while. Whack name aside, we do love the other Monster hard seltzers. So hopefully they did tea well. Is it a good sign that they're releasing a tea pack in the middle of February, which is when I picked this up? Probably not. But, you know, we'll see. What you been up to lately, Griff?
Oh, I have been watching Resident Alien, which is a pretty fun show. I think it was originally sci-fi, but it's on Netflix now. Almost done with season two. It's got Alan Tudyk in it, and he's an alien that is disguised as a human and has to do human things.
Mm.
And there's a lot of like intrigue and mystery in the back end of it. That's interesting, but I think for the most part, it's a comedy. And then I've been playing some Deep Rock Survivor, which is kind of like Vampire Survivor, Gallowspire Survivor. It's the like roguelike bullet hell version of the Deep Rock universe, which is normally like a first person shooter mining thing.
I want to play it so bad.
It's really fun.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's a good time. I've put a couple hours into it and having a blast playing the soldier right now.
Ooh, good times. Good times. Anything else? Those the highlights?
Yeah, those are the highlights.
Yeah, honestly, for me, not a whole bunch of craziness going on here. I am nearing the end of Resident Evil 4. I am flying through Vampire Diaries, but I guess as far as new stuff goes, well, this isn't really new, but I'm rewatching Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Just got through the Chimera episode, the early one that gives everybody depression. So it's only uphill from here.
Yeah.
But boy, that is a quality show. It was one of the shows that got me into anime, so revisiting it is really exciting, a lot of fun. And then I also resumed the Chainsaw Man manga. I had gotten to the end of, I think they called it like arc one or story one or whatever. The anime right now is probably like a third of the way through the big overarching first arc of the manga, which basically ends after the 11th volume. So once I got to the end of that, I waited and let some more get released and build up. So I'm back on that. It's really, really good. I'm enjoying it. I'm also reading Tokyo Ghoul, which is a show that I started and stopped and then started again. And I think stopped again. I don't think I ever finished it. So now I'm beyond where I've seen and really, really liking it. So I'll probably be talking about that a lot in our Discord as I near the finish line there. I think I'm on volume like 11 of 14, but that is an absolute blast. That's really it though, man. Been really busy with work and stuff outside of work and stuff. So not a whole lot to report, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I am very excited to try this week's hard seltzer pack. It's not really a hard seltzer pack. It's a hard tea pack. You know what I mean? We, of course, are doing Monster's Nasty Beast hard tea variety pack. So the website copy on this is brewed hard to... party harder. And then followed up a little later on the page by, are you ready to get nasty? And that's it. That's all the copy on the website, but there is some copy on the box and the cans, which is the same that I'll read now. The usual suspects were enjoying a few cold ones and decided to check out some hard iced tea from the competition. Eventually, someone commented, "This stuff is just plain nasty." Channeling Jack from Boogie Nights, someone else said, "Good name." I disagree. Just like that, the idea was born. Truth is, we've been making great tasting iced tea for over 25 years and have some great recipes stashed away. So we brewed up some, blended in our super clean alcohol, dialed in the flavor, and came up with a cool can design for our new baby. You be the judge. Crack open a can of our new Nasty Beast Hardcore Tea, and you'll see it's by far the best tasting hard tea out there at 6% alcohol. It's smooth as silk. I didn't read this ahead of time. But still gets the job done. We're no Dirk Diggler, but still pretty proud of what we got. Boy, what an exciting beverage to try. Really enjoyed that copy. It's 6% ABV, or I'm sorry, it's 6% ABV. And there's no sugar in this thing, which is a little surprising, but I know Monster tends to like avoid sugar in a lot of their, at least newer flavors. Of the flavors that we got, we have original, we have tea and lemonade, and peach. Griff, you may be wondering, how are we gonna rate these seltzers? Well, when I first saw this pack, I thought to myself, Nasty Beast, what an awful name for a product, especially one that you're supposed to consume. And then when I started to think about it, I think this might be a little bit of a Mandela effect because the Nasty Beast has been around us this whole time. So we're going to be down the Nasty Beast scale. 1 out of 5 is Mr. Nasty Beast Burger, name of the burger chain, of course. Then 2 is Nasty Beast, of course, the mutant from X-Men. 3 is Marshawn Lynch's name, Nasty Beast Mode. Then we also have 4, Beauty and the Nasty Beast, which is a classic Disney movie. And then 5 is 666, Number of the Nasty Beast, which is from the Book of Revelations. So basically as OG as you can come. Are you excited for these?
Yeah.
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 Me too. How about we get started here? I've been talking for a minute. We got original, if you want to crack that open. And there's a little bit of website copy that I wrote on the sheet.
Yeah, original, the OG brewed, hard to party harder.
All right. What are your thoughts?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty clean. It's not very sweet.
No, it's not. Surprisingly not.
It tastes like just tea, which is kind of nice. I mean, there's a little sweetness there, but it's nowhere near like the brisk ones.
No, I like this a lot more than the brisk ones.
Yeah, it's pretty clean. I like it.
I think Arizona still takes it for me, at least in the original here. This has a little bit of an odd aftertaste, but it's kind of like blended into the tea aftertaste. It's not terrible. I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5. That's a beauty in the Nasty Beast, just knowing that there is better out there, but they're doing a good job. What do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely Arizona's tea is top tier for me. So
yeah.
And yeah, I don't know if that's the alcohol or what it is. It feels like it might be a weird spice in the tea at the end, but mm-hmm. I'm not really sure about it.
Yeah, there's a little something in there. Let's hop on over to our second of 3 here. This is going to be the tea and lemonade varietal. Classic flavors that just hit harder together. All right, I've had it. While you're sipping, I guess I'll also mention now that like the white Monster can in the original pack, these have like a texture on the can and there's like a beast bursting out of the print, I guess. It's a pretty good can.
I don't like that.
Really?
I think that tastes like vodka to me.
I gotta go back in for another sip because that's not really what I got.
I'm not really getting a ton of tea. I mean, I guess I get it, but maybe the tea's giving me an off flavor.
The tea's pretty light. I will say it's a little bit more lemon forward than tea forward.
It tastes like if you put a shot of vodka in their rehab flavor.
I can see that a little bit. I don't dislike this, but I think it is definitely weaker than the original. I think it does fulfill the promise of the premise, though. So I'm going to give this a Nasty Beast Mode, aka Marshawn Lynch.
I'm going to go Nasty Beast from X-Men here.
I don't wow. Like it. Truth be told, I'm a little surprised, but, you know, it is not as good as the others out there. We can agree on that.
No, it's not as good as most tea flavors to me.
Well, I saved the last one for you to start off here because I'd like you to read this copy here. It's pretty good.
Peach. This peach isn't hard to reach. It's just hard.
Oh, I don't like that.
And hard is in all caps there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry.
All right, I've tasted it. What do you think?
I don't like this one either.
Huh.
Same thing. I think that, like, it's either, like, the tea blended with that, like, artificial sweet peach or whatever. It doesn't hit for me.
Mmm.
It tastes boozy to me, and I don't like that.
These back two are definitely boozy. I feel like I have booze on my breath actively, like I just took like a shot of hard liquor.
I know you can make these not boozy, but yeah. Like the original Monster ones weren't boozy.
No, not at all.
The original Monster had a peach better than this.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't dislike it. I don't think it's great. I would even struggle to maybe say it's good, but I don't think it's bad. I think it's just okay. And I could be convinced to go down to a 2 out of 5, a Nasty Beast from X-Men. But I think I'm going to give this another Marshawn Lynch, a.k.a. Nasty Beast mode. Because this is drinkable to me.
I think it's drinkable. I just don't like it. Knowing what's out there in tea, I would take almost every other tea pack over those last two flavors.
I think this is where we're starting to see some personal preference. Because we had the exact opposite on the brisk ones.
Yeah.
Where it was like, okay, this is doing what it's supposed to do, but you liked that and I didn't. And that's just like what kind of a tea flavor that you prefer, I guess. Yeah. And I think that we're just starting to see that come out a little bit, kind of roles flip-flopped here, where I think this is totally fine. I can recognize that it's not great, but it's not like gross to me, where it's triggering something in you that's not good.
Yeah, I'm going Nasty Beast from X-Men again on this one.
Ooh, boy. A much lower score across the board.
Than we probably expected.
Yeah.
I think the first one's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way those like artificially sweet flavors hit the like unsweetened at all tea. And then the booze on the back end that's giving me just like a bleh on those last two.
Yeah. And so I see before we get into our final verdict here that Eric has posted in the chat, how would you take the Arizona hard pack over this pack? I mean, every day.
Yeah.
The Arizona doesn't miss.
Yeah. The Arizona pack was 5 out of 5 on every one, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly.
Yeah. That was a perfect pack, I think. Now, notably, I saw online that Nasty Beast also makes a green tea varietal that is not in this pack.
Oh, that's a shame. I would like to see how that stacks up.
Me too. I can't imagine it would be as good.
Because honestly, I think the green tea is my favorite one in the Arizona pack.
I think I agree with that.
Yeah.
That's a really damn good hard tea.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, man. We got to go to the final verdict here. So, marred by the inhumane politics of franchise creator J.K. Rowling and suffering from shrinking box office numbers, Wizarding World of Harry Potter prequel series, the Fantastic Beasts franchise, sputtered to an unceremonious end after releasing only 3 of its planned 5 films. If Monster created the franchise Nasty Beasts and Where to Find Them based off this pack, how many of the 5 films would the franchise last?
I think it's pretty similar to the movie series at this point. I think it would last 3.
Yeah.
I think that my score maybe averages a little bit lower than a 3, but I think, you know, the pack overall is drinkable.
Yeah.
And it's probably my personal preferences that are pulling it down. So I'd say it's, 3 out of 5 movies.
I think you make it to 3 as well. I think you see the crimes of tea and lemon and then the secrets of the Peacheldor. But then whatever number 4 and 5 are supposed to be. It's not happening. That's all I see, man.
Yeah. Yeah, if you combine our scores, you get an easy, like, 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got 2 fours, 2 threes, 2 twos. That's going to even out to a 3.
Yeah. Well, we got to divvy these up. And we only have 3 of them. So I'll either take the tea and lemonade or the peach right away. You can take the original. That's fine. I was hotter on both of these. And then I guess whoever finishes first can start on this peach, and maybe at the break we'll pop out the other 3 flavors. So
see, now I'm getting cold on this one.
Really?
I'm cold. Like, yeah, I'm cold on these.
How much of this review is tainted by the fact that we almost lost a recording before this?
It's not. I'm not in a bad mood because we got it all back, so we're fine. I wanted to like these because I want to be drinking right now.
Yeah, fair enough, man. Okay, well, we're going to move into our main segment of the night here. This is originally titled It's Always Spooky in Galarian. This is where Griff and I make up stories that could take place in the Pathfinder universe. We're going to expand this so you could also do It's Always Salty in Galarian and do some pirate stories maybe instead. So, yeah, I guess what I just said kind of covered the copy that I was supposed to read, so I don't need to read that anymore. So we're going to go back and forth on this. Do you want to go first or second there, Griff?
I don't care. Up to you.
All right. How about you go first?
Okay. So my concept is a adventure set in the Steaming Sea, which is a aptly named sea covered in mist that is in like the northern part of Galarian. It's by like Thermer's Shield and Hermea and those kind of things. So I think my adventure centers around the fabled ship and pirate crew of the ship Mistmourne. It is this ship that took like an elven armada to take down, and it was this pirate captain that famously plundered the elves at the Morden Spire, and is supposed to, in lore, be a ghost ship that still prowls the area.
Ooh.
And so my adventure would be something like a three-book adventure where it's a seafaring adventure, but it's very locale based, and you essentially have to find the treasures of the original Mistmourne crew in order to put the ship itself to rest. And the final piece of that adventure would be taking on the Mistmourne itself with your own ship and crew. So kind of a spooky, kind of a salt adventure if we're talking about the two, but I think the cool thing about this adventure would be that to gather the pieces of the treasure scattered around the Steaming Sea, you'd have to visit Hermea and infiltrate it.
Ooh.
And that is like famously like the eugenics island where like the gold dragon has like a human breeding program to try and make humans like, I guess, revert back to like Aslanti in terms of perfection. And so it's like, it's seen as this utopia, but under the covers, it's like not quite.
Yeah.
And so I think that would be fun to infiltrate and explore. And I'd like to also take a stop at the Morden Spire where Earthfall happened.
Mm-hmm.
So Earthfall happened. One of the gods, I forget who, died trying to stop the asteroid and died with it in the crater, which their divinity grew into this spire that these elves came back to because the elves got like pre-warning of Earthfall and did their whole like jump to Castrovel thing and then came back in like the 2900s to this just like grown spire out of the ground and occupied it. And they're also very like insular and weird. So mm-hmm. I think that would be a fun thing to explore from a character perspective. But then I want part of the adventure to be a like an Arctic expedition onto Theramir's Shield, which is this huge glacier attached to the Steaming Sea, to have to like survive on the glacier and also recover this like piece of the treasure. So all that would culminate in getting these pieces of treasure is kind of like the adventure is one of those like MacGuffin fetch quest kind of things, but you're visiting pretty cool locales. And then culminating in like a ritual to kind of make Mistmourne like corporeal again to destroy it.
I do like your concept there in that, yeah, you're going to the different places, which lends itself very well to whether that is a like three book structure or just like a module length three act structure where you can change things up in that it's not three acts that take place in one town or one settlement or in one whatever. You see some very different things and then all in service of fighting this big old pirate ship, which mm-hmm. I like.
Yeah. I think you'd be able to use the Ironbound Archipelago as kind of like a home base to outfit your ship and that kind of thing and improve it. But I think something a lot of pirate adventures struggle with is like the open nature of being a pirate. So something a little bit more focused, but still seafaring, I think would be fun mm-hmm. and easier to write an adventure for.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my concept, man.
All right. Well, I can take over from here. I think mine has some similarities and some differences with yours. Similarly, I did try to cross over the realms of pirates and spookiness as well. And given the Nasty Beast pack, I wanted to feature a nasty beast. So my story would revolve around a creature that is known as a Dravaka. And specifically, the type of Dravaka is a Nasurgeth, also known as a Nightwave. So just to kind of set the scene here, what is that creature? Well, a Dravaka is a ravenous evil creature that is made up of darkness and evil, and where darkness and evil intersect. So when particularly powerful, awful creatures of the outer planes travel to the nexus between the shadow plane and the negative energy plane, which is that the void plane now? I think.
Yeah.
The void plane. The power of nothingness that exists there between that intersection obliterates them and creates these undead abominations, which are described as the physical embodiment of entropy. They burn with an intense hatred for all life, working to bring a final dark night to the material plane where nothing but ash and ice remain. So these are very evil, shadowy, awful creatures, and they come in a couple different flavors here. The flavor that I picked was, of course, the Nasurgeth, aka the Nightwave, but there are a couple different varietals. This one is a creature level 20, so this would be a little bit of a higher level adventure if you're kind of come up against this thing eventually. There is also the Skykeaver, the Umbrex, the Urveth, and the Vanifer. Those are ranging in levels from 13 to 21. And
you guys fought a Skykeaver or Psykeaver.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was what one of Adivion's generals was.
Nice.
Yeah, he was. I mean, they weren't named that in 1E, but mm-hmm. That was the guy with the two giant blades for arms, if you remember.
Oh. Yeah. I'm looking at the art and right now, and that's exactly how you described him. He's kind of like almost like Minotaur looking dude with those more animal hoofing legs, and he has the two blade arms and like stag antler kind of things looking. The Umbarex is like a raven with a bunch of eyes that looks very shadowy. The Urveth is basically a giant centipede.
It's the sandworm.
Kind of, yeah. We have the Vanifer, which is, I don't know, kind of like a shadowy tailing creature with wings and a tail. Yeah, I don't know.
Those are night wings, right?
That is, I think, correct. Nightwing, you're correct. But the one that I'm specifically talking about, the Night Wave, is a very, very cool looking creature. It's a Mako shark that has the giant mouth of teeth, right, that are all like splayed out and huge. It looks like a Shadow Realm version of a Mako shark with a couple extra fins, like maybe some scaly armor plates on it, big red nasty eyes, and then like the lantern fish kind of has that unicorn-like stalk with the lantern on the end. He's got like five of them in the art. So this is a very creepy looking creature. Now, they are spiritual essence made manifest in physical form. Usually fiends that end up going into this intersection between the two planes. And it is like this new being that oftentimes has control of undead and will enslave them and then use them to try and wipe people out just for destruction's sake. So the Nasurgeth, aka the Night Wave, typically lurks low deep in the ocean and then at night will, I guess, go up and maybe fly into the sky and start raining destruction down on the people. The way that I would structure this adventure isn't necessarily too dissimilar from you. I would have like a pirate crew that's involved. And I thought there's kind of two ways that maybe you could go about this. Maybe one concept is where, because there's such a tie to the shadow plane, a Nidalee's wizard had cast a fiend into this reality's end area, this intersection, thinking they could control the beast that came out of it, but they can't. And now this creature is running rampant and summoning undead. And the Nidalee's are like, well, we gotta get a pirate crew to kill undead pirates, so you're up. And then you basically spend the first half of the adventure fighting like undead pirate crews or raveners or whoever is terrorizing the coast there in the hopes that wiping these people out will catch the attention of this creature, drawing it out so you could go into some sort of combat with them. Do they like beat you? I hope not, but I was thinking a third act could be that if you get this creature on the back ropes, it escapes to that nexus in between the shadow plane and the void plane. And I haven't looked at like the planar rules for following a creature there, but that would be a really cool climactic third act to chase that creature down into its home and fight in another plane, which is a lot of high level adventures do that.
Well, it would be fun to take that it escapes to the shadow plane and is trying to get back to the nexus, and you, because like you can survive the shadow plane.
Oh, sure.
So like you track it to the shadow plane and then have to get to it before it gets to the nexus.
That would be dope. And that, honestly, I think that makes way more sense. So there you go. That's like the third act of the story. I also thought maybe the adventure hook could be modified to take place instead of by Nidal, to go by Geb, and you're hired by Geb because this creature is like taking all of their undead and turning them against them. And so they need you to hunt them down and stop the bleed of their resources, which are mindless zombies and stuff.
All our crop farmers are turning and becoming pirates.
Yeah, this shadow shark is getting us. So
call to the sea. I think the idea of like a water world with zombies is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like if this thing is like spawning them from the ocean, it could be really cool that like the first act is you trying to like defend the land from like the undead encroaching on like, you know, undead manned pirate ships and flotillas and stuff. Ooh. Like trying to encroach on the land. It's like once they get to land, we're screwed. We got to keep him at sea and like fight him back.
And I also love the idea of fighting against maybe an undead pirate crew that has reinforcements that are like an undead kraken and an undead, I don't know very many aquatic creatures, but like all of the typical bad guys that you would fight are joined up here and are just like mindless undead slaves that are also against your crew. So
nice.
I think it would be a cool adventure. I think it'd be fun. It'd be a little higher level, but this is a really cool creature, and I wanted to create a little something around it.
Makes you wonder, like, what kind of character you bring to that, because it's like, you could bring the classic, like, cleric undead slaying, yep, or, like, paladin, but, like, you have all of the ship stuff to consider. Like, do you bring a swashbuckler to the undead-centered sea campaign? I don't know.
Yeah. I guess that's what having good party comp is for.
It would inspire some interesting multi-classes, for sure. Some interesting archetypes.
I agree. Well, I think those are our stories, man. All right. I think it's question time. Haley, we got any in the chat?
All of one. Eric has asked, have you ever gone swimming or otherwise ended up in water wearing heavy clothes or non-swimming gear? Thinking, you know, plate mail, paladin on a boat.
I mean, not like that, but yeah.
I think this would have happened.
I've been pushed into a pool in clothes before.
Yeah, definitely been pushed into a pool.
It's not fun.
Before. Were you wearing shoes at the time? That's awful.
No. I make it a point to take my shoes off the second I am on a pool deck.
Yeah.
No matter what pool it is, my shoes are off.
That is
I could be in pants and a button-down shirt. Mm-hmm. Unless the pool is covered, my shoes are off.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, I'm dipping my toesies, baby. Doesn't matter what I'm wearing. I get a little nasty with it.
It is nasty. Yeah, I get it.
I get, and then I like to leave my big old footprints all around the deck.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I guess I don't know that I have like a specific thing, except, yeah, I've been clothed in the water before. It sucks. Shoes are bad. Don't do that.
I mean, I've walked in water in wet shoes before. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, that happens sometimes. It sucks.
Yeah. It's also not quite the same thing, but you know, those like water shoes and swimming in those, I never like.
They just don't have the same like push.
Exactly. Yeah. There's like a little bit of a drag when the water gets inside the soles of that stuff where, you know, they're made for like walking in water, right? But actually swimming kind of is not a great experience.
Did you guys see that wedding where someone had their wedding and it was in like, I don't know, knee on short people, but like calf deep water. And so everyone got, showed up to this wedding and like had to wade into calf to knee deep water.
That sounds horrible.
I know. And then they had to sit and like everyone had like wet pants.
Did they know ahead of time that that was going to be a thing?
I think so, but the, it was higher
than
expected.
Why wouldn't you wear like 5-inch shorts, baby? That's what I'm wearing to that wedding.
I just imagine like having a longer dress with a bunch of layers too.
Oh, I'm wearing my tailored suit bottom cutoffs to that wedding.
100%.
You see me looking like the one guy in Reno 911. My short uniform.
Officer Dangle.
Yeah, Officer Dangle.
That's great.
Let's see. One more question. We got, we've got two more questions, but I don't know if we're allowed to take questions from Chris since he's on so many shows now. But Tim has asked, when are you going to awaken first with the Howl of the Wild coming out?
Oh, dude, I really want to play an awakened octopus.
Huh.
I think that would be so much fun.
Is there a list of animals that can get awakened?
There probably will be.
Yeah.
There will be like, I imagine they're going to have like awakened like rabbit, awakened badger, awakened, you know.
And I guess I'm not really super familiar with what's going on with Howl of the Wild. Is this going to be like a... They can be like an ancestry.
It's an ancestry. That's the awakened animal ancestry.
Oh, man.
So I don't know how broad they're going to be with the awakening, but I think playing an octopus, like an aquatic race, like where you know, I need to get water every so often and whatever would be really fun.
Yeah. I would like to do an awakened emperor penguin so I can overcome the 5-foot move speed with my stomach glide speed.
Stomach glide speed. Cover me in butter so I can glide on other surfaces.
Yeah, the move speed is only 5 feet, but the stomach glide is 35, but you must be prone the whole time.
But you get kip up as a free feat only at the end of your glide.
Hell yeah.
That'd be sick.
Yeah, so I'm going to say Emperor Penguin. That's first and final answer.
5-foot move speed otherwise. You play a mountain stance monk.
There you go. can you even move?
Can't get reduced past 5, baby.
I would like to play or like have an awakened shoebill, which is just a horrifying bird.
Oh, I hate
shoebills. They're over 8 foot.
Kill your character immediately.
An 8-foot wide wingspan, and they're a horrifying creature.
They just click that big hollow beak. It's awful.
I feel like I would be menacing.
Described by Live Science as the human-sized African bird that eats baby crocodiles.
And kills its siblings.
I would like to do that.
I left that part out, but... Geez, yeah, this thing looks like it's from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's my vote.
Wow.
Ew, I hate that for you.
What a choice.
Don't even think about bringing that into one of my campaigns.
I can't wait.
No, you won't. I'll kill that character in 2 seconds.
It's exciting.
You'll
be
bring
good.
Him in and take an exit.
I want
at the same
it.
Episode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Griffin has squashed my goals.
Play with a different GM.
Get off my table.
So, does Chris count?
We'll do him quick.
Yeah, we can field this.
Chris asked, "Which sea animal have you not eaten that you'd like to eat if there were no consequences?"
There are certain fish that you need like an extremely experienced sushi chef to prepare or else they're poison, and I would never do that. So I guess if there were no consequences, I would like to try what those fish taste like, because I'm too scared that I'll get poisoned.
This is, again, if it was like ethically okay.
He's gonna say shark fin soup.
Exactly. I'm just curious what the hype is about. But if it's fantasy, mermaid, because I want to see if they taste like people or fish.
Are you pulling from the top or the bottom?
I don't know.
I think you gotta have a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Just like at Thanksgiving, we gotta have white meat and dark meat both.
You know, oh boy, I'm gonna say some cursed shit. You know the sushi that's served on like a naked woman?
Yeah.
What if you just like cut up the bottom half of a mermaid
Steve!
And served it on the top
Steve,
half?
Steve, no!
Oh, Steve.
Moving on.
I'd like my sushi with extra corpse, please.
Well, I think that answers that question.
It absolutely does.
Let's move on here. Newt asked a question. I'm pulling from the archives here, unless we see anything else coming back up in the chat. In Galarian Beach Volleyball, do different ancestries have different sets of rules? Rules such as no super frog jumps, no flights, or no swapping your skull with the volleyball as a trick, etc. I think if we're talking volleyball, I'm immediately, and maybe this is an easy answer, I'm thinking about the skeleton that gets improved reach when you put your two arms together.
You spike it with the second arm?
Yep.
I think all that's in play. I think you just got to get good.
Oh, interesting.
I think you just, you use what you got. It's not an unnatural advantage if it's a natural advantage to you.
I guess that's a good point.
Like, by the same token, you got another volleyball feat if you're a human. You got an extra skill in a profession volleyballer.
Now that's compelling. Yes.
In lore volleyball.
Yeah. The skeleton is my answer, but I guess that's a good point. Everything can go. It's a fantasy world.
Well, no, I think he's saying, are there rules against, like, that kind of stuff for other ancestries? Like, if you were a team of humans playing against a team of with a Gripply and a skeleton and whatever, would they be banned from doing such things, or would they be allowed? And I would say allow all the hijinks.
Okay. Yeah.
So you got to prepare for that. If you're a Galarian volleyball player, that's something you prepare for.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was that question. We've got a whole lot more behind that. Let's see. What else do we want to hear? Here's a less silly one. Human Bean asks, Griff, you're really great at the narrative moments where you describe a setting in action, like the scene setting right before the boarding in the most recent Skull and Shackles, or the moments with the Queen in Bestow Curse. Do you script those moments word for word, or do you drill in the beats and just keep it loose in the moment? That's a good question.
I think if you asked me, like, early in the Carrying Crown run, some of that stuff was scripted, but now I don't really script anything. I mean, I think even your, like I did your, like, level up moments in Skull and Shackles off the cuff, and I think people generally liked those, and I felt like they, like, fit your characters, but I don't really tend to script much anymore, unless it's, like, a scripted moment in the AP. And in that case, I'll usually take what the AP wrote and, like, either embellish it or summarize it in a different way so that it's not just, like, me reading the same text you heard when your GM ran it in Curse. Sometimes information just needs to get imparted, and so it's just like, Cressida says this, and I just say it, but you guys often interject in the middle of a monologue or something, so I have to kind of riff on it as well. I mean, that really comes with, like, again, like, 6 years of podcasting experience. I can riff on that stuff really well now. I definitely couldn't at the beginning, and I don't think scripting anything is a bad thing. I don't tend to do it anymore because I kind of have a good feel for, like, how I want to describe something.
Different strokes for different folks. And especially if there's something that you want to nail perfectly, like the final boss.
Yeah, thing, there were certainly moments in the finale of Carrying Crown that I scripted because I was like, this is exactly how I want this to sound. And I did that. But in general, I've kind of stopped doing it.
Yeah, makes sense. Absolutely. Let's see here. What other questions do we got? Let's do a quick fun one. 10 Lawn Gnome / Eric asks, are chili cheese fries poutine?
Oof, I don't know that we're experts on poutine, but I'd say anything that doesn't have cheese curds isn't poutine.
Yeah, I was doing a little Googling, and I think I agree with you. One of the key components is having cheese curds in there, and I guess you could do a version of chili cheese fries poutine. Maybe this is a square is always a rectangle, but a rectangle isn't always a square situation. You could probably approximate poutine with chili cheese fries and make something work. It's probably pissing off our Canadian listeners right now. I'm just saying that you could probably figure something close out. I'm not saying that it is, but I don't think inherently it is.
I think it, you know, that would really depend on, like, your definition of gravy.
Sure, yeah.
Because, like, poutine, I think in its essence is like cheese curds, gravy, and French fries, right?
Yeah, Wikipedia says it's just those three things.
And so, you know, if you were to make a chili cheese poutine, I would maybe swap the like shredded cheddar with cheese curds, and then you could kind of say that the, you know, depending on your chili is maybe a gravy equivalent, but you know, to call it poutine would require me to have a Canadian card, and I don't have that.
Yeah, but what you do have is an American card, which means that you could use the American name for the dish, which I just learned as I'm looking up on Wikipedia.
What's the American name of the dish?
Disco fries.
Disco fries. Okay, that's horrible. I don't really think poutine's like a hard word to say. So I don't know why we...
You don't want to slam a bowl up at poutine and then go out dancing.
I don't know why we didn't do... If we called French fries French fries...
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we call it French Canadian fries?
Oh, now that's a good question. You would think.
You'd think we could go that route, right?
You would think.
Oh, I just realized I have a chance to go to Canada.
Okay.
And I can't wait to actually have poutine.
I don't know that I've ever had like authentic, because I've never been to Canada, so I don't think I've ever had like authentic poutine.
Yeah, I know I have tried to make stuff. It's hard for me because...
Be careful about the gravy.
Gravy needs to be gluten-free. And some people, a lot of people don't make it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Especially brown gravy. Some people do. Well, I guess brown gravy might be easier to make gluten-free.
No, they all add flour.
I thought white gravy was where you really just like had a roux. And put
either way, I'm hoping I'm have a chance, like with work, I'm probably going to be going to Canada in the next few weeks. And I'm like, I could get real food.
Yeah. All right, we got a couple more questions in here we can keep asking. Nikki McM asks, how does living through the COVID era affect your game mastery of Curse of the Crimson Throne? This is probably directed at you, Griff. We have lived through a pandemic. Can you compare and contrast the way you think people reacted?
I think it made it more impactful. Mm-hmm. I think it was like a more interesting part of the adventure because of us having been through the pandemic. You know, there was also the opportunity to make like PPE jokes and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which we certainly wouldn't have prior to COVID. I really think Curse is like an exercise in, wow, they almost like predicted the entirety of the early 2020s in an adventure path, and at least in America. And so I think you do have to tread a little bit lightly, but like, at least for my group, everyone took COVID very seriously. So it felt serious. It landed. It wasn't the, you know, oh, people are getting sick. Okay. It was like, oh, wow, this is really serious. Oh, wow. We need to be like really careful and actually try and not contract this. And, you know, the steps were taken, and I don't think they would have been taken pre-COVID.
Yeah, it definitely hit closer to home. It helped inform the narrative specifically. It's just interesting, you know, having lived through something like COVID and then having an adventure path that's very similar to that. You know, there are adventures like where you go fight a dragon or you're trying to root out your serial killer or something. And I've never fought a dragon and I've never like been chased by a serial killer yet. I do have direct experience here about PPE and avoiding crowds and this, that, and the other thing. So it definitely did inform. And I think it hit close to home with a lot of folks that were listening. We definitely got a lot of interaction, especially in book two, from on the Discord and online and stuff, which I thought was interesting. We were able to generate some positive conversations around it. So,
yeah.
Let's flip to a little more of a fun one. Newt asked, do Tengu parents feed their children like birds do? Do Nagaji like swallowing food whole? What other sort of biological peculiarities do you think Galarian's creatures have?
I think birds don't have hands and Tengu do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there might be a component of like mushing the food up, but I kind of doubt they like regurgitate it into their child's mouth because they're humanoid and have like sensibilities.
Well, I will also say that we have Emily in the chat and Emily is playing a Tengu right now. So Emily, if you want to chime in and let us know, I'm sure you did a lot more research than we did when you were creating your character. Just let us know what you think if Tengu vomit into their kids' mouths.
For the Nagaji piece, I think it depends which kind of Nagaji you are, because like Atlas certainly isn't swallowing things whole.
No way.
But the ones that are snake-headed, you know, definitely can.
Mm-hmm. Do Nagaji ever get like a unhinge your jaw thing?
I'm not sure about that. I don't know.
Saw anything like that in their feet. It's certainly not inherent.
Would be interesting. I mean, some of them still have venom.
Right.
So you'd imagine there's a aspect there that's like, okay, it's meant to take down prey and eat it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to do a little bit more homework on this one, because I don't think there is like a real like swallow hole type build or anything. There's the poison one, there's the sacred one, there's one that I think it's a little bit of reach with a long neck, there's like one that has armor built into them, but I don't think one is like trying to swallow stuff. And I definitely didn't see any feats, at least in the low levels, that would let you do that. Not saying there's not something at like level 17 or something, who knows. But got any other biological peculiarities you can think of?
I think like parents of Sulis probably have like issues with their kid having like flaming hair and them not having like an inherent like fire resistance.
Oh,
You know, or those other elemental quirks, I think would be an issue for like children of those.
Yeah,
of
you those might have kind like of a races. Isn't like Jack from The Incredibles like kind of a menace?
Yeah, exactly. Because he's got like all these powers that are hard to handle, and I think, you know, any of the elemental born, it didn't manifest in their parent for whatever reason, would have a tough time just like harnessing that as a child. So might be like extra careful when their abilities come up.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people probably think, hey, you know, Leshies, Gorons, anything with a plant ancestry, probably, you know, having listened to Carrion Crown, you're thinking they probably have some predilection for enjoying piss, but that's not true. That's just regular plants. That has nothing to do with Leshies or anything with the plant subtype that they, you know, can think.
I think we kind of like address this in Speak with Plants in some respects, like where we're all like sticking our fingers into like the the mineral water and that kind of thing to absorb it instead of actually like drinking it.
Yeah, I would say we really deep dive into some biological peculiarities of Leshies and Gorons and stuff in that show. So I would suggest if people want to learn more, check it out. We did get a follow-up from Emily on this question about whether Tengu regurgitate into their children's mouths there. She says, I'd say it's possible, but they would have other methods to start to digest food for babies. Like we have formula, they would have another option. So that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, maybe ancient Tengus had that practice and with modern times require modern solutions or whatever.
Yep. I think so. All right. Well, we only have one question left here on my list. So if y'all have anything that you want to throw up in the chat, by all means do. But otherwise, we're going to hop into a question from Pona. I'm listening to the main podcast now after having caught up on Bestow Curse. Question for Griffin. When did you notice your GM style shifting, and what do you think changed? I think we've got variations of this question before, but this is, I always kind of like looking at this person is listening to our current stuff and then has hopped back 5 or 6 years in the past. Like there's some sort of noticeable difference there. Reflecting on that, what are you thinking, Griff?
You know, I think a lot of it comes from confidence and experience. It's one of those things that, you know, as with any other skill, requires repetition to get good at.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bestow Curse is what, like 4 years into our podcasting career. It's 4 years into like me GMing for radio. So it's a lot more put together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were a lot of things that I thought good GMs did at the beginning of Carrion Crown that I don't necessarily think are required this far down the line. Like I used to way over prep and really kind of like stress how episodes were going to go. And now I way better at going with the flow. I think it kind of, you know, it was reflected in my comment earlier where I talked about, well, yeah, now I don't really script it like a lot. And before I scripted like everything that I could so that I knew exactly what to say. And I think,
You eventually reach a point GMing where you realize that like less is more, and that kind of loosening the reins not only allows you to improv better, but it also leads to better character run episodes or sessions. Mm-hmm. And you know, that only really comes with experience and trusting your table and playing with your table for a long time. So you hear it in how Bestow Curse episodes are run versus how early Carrying Crown episodes are run. In terms of like when I kind of felt that change, I think it was really, and this is spoilers for the main campaign, so, or for the Carrying Crown campaign, so most of you have listened to that. But I think it was around the Schloss and maybe before in the trial a little bit, where I really understood that I could lean on you guys to like carry a lot of the role playing and emotional load of the episodes. And something like when Lyra dies, like that episode after where you all kind of like got together and had like eulogies and that kind of thing, and I could like add to that with like things that Eclipse experienced, having like a connection to the spiritual world, or you know, etc. Like I felt like I could just pepper stuff in, but all of the content was there from you guys just putting it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots changed.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think anyone that's GM for a long time kind of goes through that,
mm-hmm.
where you realize that like, hey, I can't prep everything, so maybe I shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Or hey, you know, maybe I don't need to script these moments because my players are gonna like bounce off each other and take it in a direction that my script doesn't account for, and so maybe I should just be able to riff off of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's some good advice, man. That I think it is. But that's the end of the questions that I got. So I think we are headed towards the end of this thing. I will also note that I see Tim in the chat is saying that regurgitating is important for the emotional connection to your baby, though, in response to the Tengu stuff. So just think about that. Do we have anything to plug at the end? Now, I know that we recently had an appearance, the two of us, on the After Party live show that Find the Path puts out. That should be hitting their maiden feed soon. I don't know the exact date offhand. But if you did not check us out live on that, Find the Path is going to be releasing that episode, and you can see us, well, I guess listen to us, hang out with Rick and Rachel. And we just had a great time. So yeah, check it out. It's fun.
Yeah. And again, I think we plugged this last time, but if you listen to Strange Table Fellows as well, they're releasing the entirety of our Attack of the Swarm run that Steve and I were on, Hideous Tomfoolery. It's on their main feed right now as they kind of transition between their first completed adventure, or first, geez, it's not even like first completed adventure, but like the 9-book run of their main show into another show. So if you want to hear more of us and want to hear us play Starfinder, I'm playing a Vanguard and Steve is playing Mystic in that campaign. And it's pretty fun.
This may surprise you, but I'm playing a highly optimized healer.
Shocking.
Shocking. All right, Haley, did we get any final jams today?
We did not, besides a general what the fuck when it comes to the mermaid sushi thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I think that checks out. And what a great image for us to go out on. So for those of you who are joining us live today, we are about to hop over into the Drunken Discordly chat in our Discord to hang out with you folks for a little bit before we sign off for the night. But to everybody else, thank you for joining us today. Had an absolute blast. Griff, is there anything you want to say to the people at home before we get out of here?
No. Enjoy your mermaid sushi. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Later.